Now, regular listeners to this show will have heard us play several tracks over the years by Jar Wobble, the reggified alias of John Wardle, bass player, keyboardist, leader of various bands, and all-round musical buccaneer. Wobble's 20-year career has described a huge arc from the dub-styled bass he played with his first band, Public Image Limited, to the North African-inflected rock of Invaders of the Heart. Last year, of course, he began dipping his toes into the highly grown-up world of full orchestral scoring. In fact, Wobble's been so prolific recently that it's become rather hard to keep up with him. 3 albums a year is his average at the moment. So we invited him along to the studio for a bit of mellow career retrospective from Pill to the present. So Wobble, starting from what most people would think was the beginning of your career, you joined Public Image Limited and you brought to it a very strong dub influence. Was that your primary musical influence at that time?
Yeah, very much.
And how did your interest in dub sit with the rest of the band?
Easy, certainly with John Keith. We couldn't articulate stuff too well then. I think what we were looking for was something, what I now realise is modal, and more power to Keith, you know, because he's really good.
Keith Levine.
Yeah, great guitar player. Really good guitar player. Really naturally understood. He had a great feel for sort of chromatic scales and stuff. You listen to stuff like pop tones, the harmonics. This harmonic sense is incredible in there. You know, it's pretty advanced, really, for this mad kid of sort of 22 or something he was at the time, you know.
The Desert Island Disc question, which of those Public Image tracks are you most proud of? If you could only take one away with you, which would it be?
Pop Tones. Yeah, Pop Tones.
Because of that modal stuff?
Yeah, I think it's a very, very strange... It's one of those ones, it's kind of modal, but it suggests modulation as well. It sort of modulates at the same time while staying in... And it kind of falls in between. It's that thing. It falls in between major and minor, where a lot of my tracks do, I think.
How did you move from Public Image to working with the guys from Cairns, your guy on Leavesite?
Very simple, mutual friend, Angus McKinnon.
And you started working together?
Yeah. Met Holger and Jackie. Thought Holger was a great character. Very German. I mean, very much. He reminds me of probably... You meet Holger, I think it gives you an idea of what it would be like to... Bach or Beethoven. It's a very German thing, you know. Very logical, yet at the same time madly metaphysical as well, you know. That was marvellous. And that was an education. That's where, if anything, where I learned. And Holger taught me to have faith in the music and to trust my instincts, basically. And one of the important things he told me was respect. He wouldn't call it tunes or tracks. He called it pieces, which is a classical term.
That seems to have opened you up to all kinds of influences, because not long after that you formed your group Invaders of the Heart.
I'd had a little power trio just prior to that, and I was looking for this big band, and that's when I really was starting to learn. I was really learning about how to get different instruments, and that's merged a lot of different styles. Yeah. They had jazz players, quite a lot of jazz players. They had more jazz players than what you call world music artists in it, actually.
I suppose, though, that what put most people to that project was this very effective blending of a kind of dubby bass and those sort of North African vocals that you used. How did you get into it?
Through listening to shortwave in my late teens and early 20s. I'd listened to Radio Cairo and Radio Tehran, and that was even better then, because I still think of North African music with a massive oscillation, like massive phase on it. And of course shortwave gives the best phasing in the world. It's a very long phase indeed, from the top of the stratosphere down to earth and back up again. So that was how I first heard it. And what I liked, you see, what was good with the bass, you didn't have loads of harmonies going on. Everything tends to be in unison. There's drones and there's overtones. It's a lot easier to pitch a bass in there. You haven't got a load of lushness going on. You know, you can get right to the root of it.
What about the very interesting collaboration you did with Brian Eno, Spinner, where you seem to be sort of exploring a field that's broadly termed ambient? How did that one come about and how did you feel it went?
I was thinking it was going to be a big trouble, to be honest. You know, Brian Eno wants you to produce an album, and it's like, well, oh, this could be good. Well, what's the score? And it was, well, Brian's done this soundtrack for this film, but it doesn't feel the soundtrack is... Well, it was a Derek Jarman film. He doesn't feel that the soundtrack is good enough in its own right to release as a piece of music. He'd like to do some work on it. Basically, he sent over a collection of about 16, 17 little noises on that, little squeaky noises and atmospheres and stuff, and we set it to music. And I said to everyone, well, this is sounding pretty good, but this is going to be trouble. Because I heard he sometimes changes his mind and it'll suddenly get really difficult. Done it, everything's fine. Got a dodgy fax from him saying that he wanted me to seduce him more, that he was going to be a Moorish maiden and I had to be a Saracen or something. And I just thought, oh God, here we go. you know, I don't need this. It's going to get lovey-ish. And I must say, this is going to get lovey-ish. But I met him and he said, do you really like it? And I said, yeah, if I didn't like it, I wouldn't send it over to you. And he said, it's good enough for me. So it was like, whew. And he was a nice man.
Recently, you've done a couple of albums where you've put music with spoken word.
Mm.
The Irish one, the Celtic poets, and also before that, the poems of William Blake. How did you get involved in that?
Very simply with Blake, must have been four, five, maybe six people, all independently of each other, had said to me, you've got to check Blake out. And I eventually opened the book that a mate gave me, read it, loved it, opened it. It was like, wow, man, this fella really understands. It was like finding, I suppose, if you're a Pakistani or something and you read Rumi, or you're an Arab and you read, and you've got these mystic, heavy-duty mystic sort of poet to read. And it was like, this is terrific. I'm a Brit and I've got this heavy-duty mystic Brit that I've found.
And so was the music tailored to the poetry, or was the music already
both
there?
Come together. That was it. It was one of those absolute synchronicity things where it was no plan to make a Woody and Blake album. I'd been working on a load of music that was very weird, where it was kind of hard to tell where the bass began and ended, and where the bass drum began and ended, and where was that a sax sound or was that a guitar? You know, it was kind of one of those kind of weird underwater kind of recordings where separation goes. At the same time you're getting this music, you're getting into Blake, and so just cut a couple of tracks using Blake poems. Thought long and hard about how to compile it, and it became an album that pays homage to William Blake. So that's the story there.
What about the orchestral music, which you've started to get interested in recently? How did you come to approach that? Because, I mean, that's really pretty technical stuff. I mean, a lot of the other things you've done, you could rely on intuition and feel, but scoring for orchestras is not something that you can just sort of pick up a pen and...
Yeah,
off
still
you go.
I think you get the same sense of flow in there. It must have, you're dealing with a lot more things. I'd never planned to get into orchestral. It was one of those ones. You work in, say, first of all, with Pilt four-piece, then I start putting my own five, six, seven, eight pieces, even getting as many as 11 and 12 on stage. When you go over five or six, you've got to get into arrangements. Mm. You've got to basically get into territory where you basically have to say, when he plays that, you have to stop playing that and you have to play this. And then that develops till, in the end, you start trying little horn arrangements, actual horn arrangements, and writing little orchestrations for them. And it just developed from that.
And more recently, there's this concerto for the Liverpool Philharmonic, The River. It's a long way from dub reggae, though, isn't it?
Same essence, the same dynamics. There's a little air of tension, there's little suspended things on the violins, and then the cellos come in talking with a little bit of urgency, and then there's woodwind that's almost pastoral, you know, it's like kind of bird call or humans crying, and then suddenly, bam, and kick the double basses, you know. And it's like, yes, yeah, it's still the same thing.
Let's talk about The Light Programme, which is your most recent commercial release, and a piece I really like. This, you seem to be getting back towards your jazz influences again.
This one was made, how this was done, the basis of it was me sitting down, sort of at a keyboard going through a few little licks and stuff, and sometimes getting a couple of other players in if Jackie was overdoing a thing, you
Jackie
know.
Jackie Lieberzeit.
Yeah, so he's on two or three tracks on there, playing absolutely wonderfully, you know.
What classic. Do you like about, as a bass player, what do you like about his drumming?
What he really understands, he understands 12th notes. If you imagine a house drum beat that's programmed and it goes do, 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 but yet you think of a body moving, you think in slow motion of a horse running or a man running, then the interesting point is the foot leaves the ground. That's what you call, that's what I think of the pickup note, you know. Do gap, do gap, do gap. Is that, it will sit in four, but there's a kind of element of 12 in there. And what you've got is three, which is the infinite. Three is the number that goes on for, you know, forever. And then four, which is the ground, it's the terra firma, you know, our hearts is a regular beat, one, you know, one, two, three, four, whatever. And so it's the infinite with the finite, the absolute mixed the relative. Seriously, you know, that's what's going on there. So you've got the infinite suggested in the drumming as well as something very concrete, very earthed, very definite. All the elements are there, basically. And I fleshed that out with a bass. I put the, you know, some breath in there. And it's, and what I love with the man, because it's just easy.
Why do you call this album The Light Program?
Because it's about light. It's got a feeling of light running through it. It's quite up. The music's very light compared to a lot of the stuff that I've done. Because of that, it made me think of The Light Program, the old BBC Radio 2. And this is my light program. It's about as light as I'll ever get. This stuff was never supposed to come out as an album. The idea was it would be for theme music for television. That this is the kind of music I'd love to hear on TV, gardening shows and stuff like that.
What do you listen to?
I listen to some classical stuff. I like modern composers, Taverner, those sort of people. Ivopar, Gorecki, those kind of people. I like their stuff. A lot of stuff from around the world, especially music of Thailand I love. The music from Laos and stuff. I like Lao music. I mean, that's great. I like North East Thailand and all that. That's the music I like. A lot of the real Far East stuff. And that's just, I tell you why, and it's not, well, because I love the Orient. It's not that. It's because it's totally universal somehow. You could send a chieftain to play with those people out of there. And if you listen to some of that, I tell you this is the truth, and I don't know who this fella is, but I've heard two or three of these top singers from there, and they've got a bass player, session man they use, and it's me. It's me. It's the phrasing's me. And it's like, who is this geezer? And this stuff's very hip, this stuff. It's very similar to African and the Southeast Asian music. Yeah, and this fella's me. It's like that Schubert song, Doppelganger, you know, it's creepy.
No, that wasn't Jarwobble on bass, but that was a Thai sound alike he discovered. That track was chosen by Jarwobble. It was from Laos, northeast Thailand, and the group is called Pong Sak Song Seng. He's actually trying to get them over here to record with them, so that's yet another album we'll have to look forward to by him.
Yeah, some delicious pop tones in that one, weren't they, Mike?